Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Joe, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Week number 2 in the brand new studio, so we are still getting used to all of this stuff. And thank you to all of the people that tweeted and responded back this past week saying that we had been missed. So it was nice to be back and nice to get this thing done. And then, of course, we rocketed right into the pay-per-view that nobody wanted to buy, which I don't know about you, and I know that Brian Stan asked Jose Aldo at the end of that fight if that was his toughest fight. Mm-hmm. It certainly appeared visually to be the toughest fight. I don't know anybody, and maybe we haven't talked this week, so maybe you are. I don't know anyone who disagrees with the decision.
No. That was pretty cut and dry.
I mean, the fifth round, obviously you could have a debate about the fifth round, but you can't win it in the fifth round unless you finish it.
Yeah, I thought Aldo took the fifth. I gave the fourth to Mendez. And to your original question, I think this is Jose Aldo's toughest fight, and I think it was Chad Mendes' toughest fight, too. And it's interesting you said visually. Jose Aldo looked like an alien after
this. Looked,
did you see him?
He looked awful. I mean, he looked bad in the ring, but then if you stayed around and watched some of the scrum, those things obviously get worse.
Right.
If you remember back to George St. Pierre and Johnny Hendricks, right?
Right, yeah.
George looked awful in the octagon, and then when you got to the post-fight thing, he looked like he had been hit by a truck.
He looked scrubby.
So this was kind of the same thing. And what's interesting to me is this bizarre aftermath, right? That so you've got all week long, and you and I spoke about it, not necessarily at length, but we talked about it. You've got Conor McGregor in Brazil, wandering around, being invited to things, yelling at crowds, you know, just giving Ariel Helwani a heart attack that they're all going to get killed at these press scrums.
When's the last time we saw Conor McGregor or anybody who's not going to be in the pay-per-view on a UFC embedded? This has got to be a first.
And you know, Dana and those guys love him for obvious reasons. You know, the marketing brain in me, I totally get why you put Conor McGregor on literally everything.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you pulled all of the copies of UFC, EA UFC right now and put him on it just to sell more copies.
Yeah.
I get what you're doing. What's fascinating, though, is if you look at what's actually happening, which, again, to go back to marketing, is always a fun thing. You know, what does the brand represent and what does it actually represent?
Yeah.
So here you have Conor McGregor. They invite him to Brazil to run rampant. They put him on embedded.
Spit him up and cut him loose.
You put him in the front row.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you're – even we were kind of wrapped up in this soap opera, right? You got Chad who hates Conor McGregor and Josie who's like, I don't even know what a Conor McGregor is.
Yeah.
And Conor who's running around – rallying everybody up. And then the reality of the situation is he's two fights away from this actually being a thing. He's got to get past Dennis Seaver, who you can say what you want, but Dennis Seaver is not an easy fight.
He's not.
And he's a dude you're going to have to murder in the octagon, figuratively, to put him away.
They say it's a good matchup for Conor McGregor.
It's I think a great matchup. And then on the other side, you've got the main event with Cub Swanson and Frankie Edgar, and Cub has been promised that shot. He said he said this week, I've been assured that if I beat Frankie that I'm in that slot.
This is not the first time he's been assured that, though.
1,000% agree, and this is kind of what I'm saying, is if you're Cub Swanson, if you're Frankie Edgar, on a more scary level, if you're Dennis Seaver, you're seeing this stuff go. If you're Dennis, and you know, we've had the opportunity to talk to him a couple times, and you've seen him on a million things over the course of his career.
Right.
He's a dude that laps this stuff up. Oh, this is your golden boy? Got it. I'll be in the gym from 5 a.m. to 4 a.m. the next day getting ready for this thing just to be the spoiler of all this. I don't know, because it's hard for me to get past the hype train, which I'm thoroughly enjoying, to have a detailed analysis of what I think Conor looks like in a real live fire scenario. I think Dennis Seaver is a tough fight. especially when you're able to run around with a belt that isn't yours, and they let you run around Brazil, and they build you up to be this monster. And you're not dealing with the WWE, right? Where the WWE has done this over the course of its career fantastically, because you have a control over the outcome, right? We don't have control over the outcome. There are a million things, as last week, Kane getting hurt while being hurt is something that you can't really plan for.
Sure.
And this is the fallacy, if there is one, of this sport, is that it's getting so hard, given the level of training and the pressure to perform, it's getting so hard to show up on fight day. Right, sure. Connor nearly broke his thumb in his last fight and took it anyway.
Yeah, coming off a knee injury. So I think the featherweight division, and perhaps they do, needs to appreciate what Conor McGregor has done, which is to shine a spotlight on the featherweight division. A year ago, before Conor McGregor, nobody was talking about the featherweight division. These guys were just so, they weren't emphasized in any discussion. And now we're talking about Jose Aldo. If you were to do a poll to the guys at BW3s and you asked them who Jose Aldo was or who Conor McGregor was, I would argue that Conor McGregor would be just as recognizable, perhaps even more, than Jose Aldo.
Aside from his moxie, do you think some of that has to do with his stature? And I mean his physicality. He's taller than most of the featherweights, so he kind of doesn't look like a featherweight. You know, when Ken used to talk about the featherweights, he would talk about how, you know, they're very tiny human beings.
Yeah.
Elves or whatever he would say. And so when you bring in a person who hits that weight on the nose but still looks like, I'll use Ken's phraseology, so don't email me on this, you know, who still looks like an adult male, right? And not
there.
Right. And that's not to take anything away from these other guys, because, I mean, Jose Aldo and Chad Mendes.
I wouldn't say it's his stature. I would say, you know, his appearance is part of it, but it's definitely his charisma, his entertainment value. But then he has backed that up. He's gone in there and destroyed guys. And winning, and this is an analogy we can use for Jose Aldo, too. So Jose Aldo may be an underappreciated champion. He is.
Oh, I mean, he. If you wanted to have this discussion, which
we can,
our show. We totally can. Yeah. I would say he and Demetrius Johnson are right in there.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's defended his belt 7 times, and he still isn't number one.
He is the one and only featherweight champion.
One and only
in UFC. He came over from WEC as a featherweight champion. He's just a phenomenal, phenomenal fighter, but he doesn't have the charisma.
So, because even when Brian Stan, who I thought did a masterful job teeing him up to kind of replay that moment from the last Mendes fight, you know, running into the crowd and, I'm going to ask you questions so you can respond to your countrymen about how tough this battle was. But the Brazilian people behind me and all of the energy this week just helped me pull through those rounds that were tough. And, you know, I thought I had him in the first round, and he's a brilliantly tough human being who came back and made, and tested me. And because of my countrymen and my fans, and he said none of that stuff.
Yeah.
All of my fights are really tough. We are friends outside of the ring. We fight inside of the ring. And now there's a Joker. Like, that was the extent of it. So it's hard to.
He did just get ran over by a train.
Leading up, you only had Chad's the only one doing any trash talking.
I'll give you that. He gave, that's just his personality, though. He would say quips about him here and there, but he wasn't overtly coming out doing press conferences.
I think if you look at, and I'm not saying that everybody needs to be Chael Sonnen, or everybody needs to be Conor McGregor, or everybody needs to be John Jones, right?
Sure.
So John has a certain air about him that some people don't like. Daniel Cormier does John Jones in a way that makes people love Daniel Cormier, right?
Right, right.
Daniel has a ton of moxie and should, but he's able to do it in an affable, approachable way that makes you not go, well, that guy's a jerk. You go, well, that guy's really funny and really a good fighter.
Right.
George St. Pierre was able to trash talk without trash talking.
It was almost in an ironic way. We were almost teasing him.
Right. Well, so a better example is Carlos Condit, right? Carlos Condit cuts promos that make you want to watch his fights, but he never really says anything embarrassing about the other person.
Kind of skating the line.
You know, he just walks up to the fact and goes, this is my skill set. This is theirs. I don't think it works well for them. Yep. And so I think you can have a little bit of that without having to turn full on heel and cut promos about how terrible Chad Mendes is and that you'll beat him in the first round.
Yeah, but maybe Jose Aldo needs Conor McGregor just as bad as Conor McGregor needs Jose Aldo. This is the Lex Luthor to the,
I was just going to say, like, yes, you know, let our comic book nerd flag fly here, right? Because Batman is nobody without the Joker, and Superman is nobody without Lex Luthor, and so forth and so on. The X-Men are nothing without Magneto, and Magneto was able to, over the course of the comic books, be a good guy, be a bad guy, but he was always necessary to kind of push the story forward. And so I think you and I both know this, but if you're listening to the show and you're not somebody who really gets into that marketing side, that's why he's on Embedded. That's why he's in Brazil, because he's able to fill in the space that Jose leaves, almost to be good cop, bad cop, right? Jose's going to go in there and do the fight. Connor's going to make Chad insanely riled up and crazy.
And it makes it fun. At the end of the day, it doesn't bother me that he's getting this spotlight. It's entertainment, and I enjoy it. It's fun to watch Conor McGregor go dancing with the Brazilians on the beach. You know, it kind of breaks up the monotony of just watching guys cut weight and getting ready for their fights. So
well, and especially
Chad Mendes called out Conor McGregor after losing.
And I don't know. I feel that Conor's smart enough not to bite on that.
Right.
Meaning that he knows he's never going to say this. He knows Dennis is a tough fight. And he knows that Cubs got next, but we've all watched the highlight reel double knee knockout of Cub. And I don't know. I've never been a super huge fan of Cub. And I don't know that he's evolved in a way that the rest of that division has. So I don't even know that he's getting by
he's still got
Frankie Edgar.
Exactly.
You know? Because Frankie Edgar, again, even if Frankie Edgar didn't evolve, which he always has, the one thing that you have to put on Frankie is that he's going to throw 600 punches, that's not an exaggeration, in 3 rounds.
Right.
And are you prepared to be hit?
You cannot put this guy out.
Are you prepared to, you can't put him out, and are you prepared to be hit or duck under 600 punches in 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Because that's a different, for as fast as the featherweights were, and I thought Saturday night was an awesome spotlight of how brilliant those fights can look, Frankie's faster. In some respects.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fight of distance. Cub is going to, if he can control the distance, then it's his advantage. And Frankie is, he's a smaller statured guy. He has to get in close to touch him.
But he's been smaller forever. He walked around 2 pounds above 155 pounds when he was champion.
Right.
So he's used to grinding it out and finding a way to get through that middle area to touch you a couple times and dump you on your head and start all over again.
So Chad Mendes is the second best featherweight in the world.
Hands down. I mean,
he lost twice to Aldo. He's not going to get another fight against Aldo, but he's the second best featherweight in the world. And it's almost like when Anderson Silva was, you know, the middleweight champ. There were guys who had to change divisions because they were the second best or the third best in the world, but they were never going to beat Anderson Silva.
Yep.
He's that dominant of a champion.
I mean, yes, and I don't know for Chad, I don't know what you do, because the problem with Chad
feature fights, wait for the guy to get hurt.
You could certainly do that, but in a career aspect, right? What do you do with this guy?
Yeah.
I mean,
he's young,
right? But it's not like he's going to fight Cub Swanson. Frankie Edgar's out of it, and Conor McGregor's out of it,
and
right?
And his teammates fill the other divisions around him, right?
Well, they fill the other divisions, and what I'm saying is, even if he stays, there's nobody really interesting for him to fight. I don't think that he hasn't already beaten.
Agreed. Yeah, I think him and Conor McGregor would be an awesome fight.
It would be, but you're not.
I think Conor's going to beat Seaver, then he's going to get the title shot.
But even if we're just playing MMA math, even if he just beats Seaver, there's no saying he's 100% when he comes out of that.
Agreed.
Right? So if Seaver's banged up and Connor's banged up, I mean, Phil Davis is out for, 8 weeks, 9 weeks?
I'm not sure.
Because of his injury, you know, and he won that fight, but
he
won't see him till the end. And not that he needs to be seen before the end of the year. we could only have one Neil Magny in the division, yeah. You know, that fights 16 times a year.
That guy's awesome.
He is awesome. But again, there you want to talk about another guy that nobody's paying attention to? He's won five in a row, yeah. all of them this year.
Yeah. American.
He's fought five times this year.
Right.
Go to the Googles or Wikipedia. Find me another fighter that fought five times this year because I'll answer that trivia question for you. There isn't one.
Right.
So you've got this thing where all eyes, to come full circle, all eyes are on Conor McGregor. That's clearly the model. Neil is a guy that, I mean, if you listened to, and I don't remember if it was you that tweeted it or Ken that tweeted it on Saturday night saying that the Joe Rogan fight companion was probably more interesting than most of the fights.
Yeah, Bill Vandeloup tweeted that.
Bill tweeted that, you know, and right. He's 1,000% right, but there was this really kind of seminal moment. You know, when you listen to us, we're coming to it from a fan perspective. Yes,
right.
We have context there and we get to do some really cool stuff and we're super thankful for that, but we're not necessarily on the inside of the organization,
sure.
Right? When you're listening to Joe Rogan, who works for the UFC, and Brendan Schaub, who fights for the UFC, say things like, I wouldn't talk about Neil unless he was a teammate of mine, and he's won five in a row in the last 12 months, that tells you something about, A, how many people are in this organization,
mm-hmm.
and B, how tough it is to get your cut of the oxygen, so to speak.
Right. The Conor McGregor has kind of shine a light on that, which is exactly what you're saying. You can win five in a row in 1 year and you're still not knocking on that door.
No, and I believe the last
can win three in the last 2 years
against guys you've never heard of.
Against guys you never heard of and be two fights away from, you know, gold. I did want to ask you about, so the two late punches after the bell rang, Jose Aldo clocked Chad Mendes twice.
Yes.
Chad appeared to stop because he, one would say, heard the bell. So he stopped, put his hands down. Jose Aldo clocked him twice, knocking Chad Mendes down. Luckily, he didn't go out, but you can't say it didn't have an effect on the fight. And I guess my question to you is, do you think he heard the bell? And if he didn't, what should the UFC do to ensure that they can hear the bell to prevent this from happening?
Well, I think two things as a leaf blower is going by the outside window of our studio. I think two things. One, my perception, and I would love your take or anybody's take, you know, in the Facebook community or the Twitter community that follows Way of the Warrior. My take about this is that they tell you in the rules meeting, if Sean was here, he would back me up on this. They tell you in the rules meeting, protect yourself at all times. And the unwritten fighter rule is it's the ref's job. You know, you don't let go of a submission until the ref stops you. And you don't get off of a guy until the ref stops you. And I don't know if he heard the bell or not. Again, as somebody who admires Chad as a fighter and obviously as a human being, the fact that he really hasn't made a big deal out of it speaks volumes to what kind of a person he is. And that should make you like him more and buy whatever he's going to do next, because it would be very easy to be like, well, those two late punches, you know, certainly wobbled me. And it took me 10 minutes, you know, end of the third round to kind of get my wits about me. I win the fourth round to some fans or the fifth round. And all of that comes off the fact of those two punches. That has not been really kind of rubbed in anybody's face.
Yeah. During the fight, would it have been his corners job to then bring that up with the ref and protest what just happened?
I think so. And again, I don't know that I've ever walked through the appellate process either during an event or afterwards about who you would talk to and how that would all go down and what you would do. Because again, I don't think you can call him dirty if you want to. I don't think it's Jose Aldo's job. Jose Aldo's job is to fight until you tell him to stop fighting. That's why you watch guys like John, who McCarthy has made some mistakes, obviously.
Yeah.
They all have. But he is the gold standard of what we look for in a ref.
Mm-hmm.
John will stand right there and literally jump in the way of kicks and punches.
Which is not what we saw during when this
happened. And you see this a lot as the expansion has gone on. And I don't want to get into a discussion about expansion, but just as much as we would grouse about, and people did grouse about this pay-per-view and other events like it because there's so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Economies of scale means when you have all of these extra events, you need a lot of extra refs. And you and I can name six of them who aren't even in the same boat as John McCarthy, let alone the same league. And so, yeah, you're going to see a lot of guys, what they call out of position. So on the wrong side of the octagon or on the wrong side of the exchange, and they're not able to get where they need to be. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's what happened. Although, to be fair, this guy was not necessarily on top of
jumping in between.
Right, him. Right. Was not jumping in between them. Okay. So we've got a lot of stuff to cover this week. So we're going to do that. When we come back, there's been some changes and there's a huge event now in February that takes place in LA. You'll have two title fights. We will talk about all of that next. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Joe, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, talking about UFC 179 as we make our way towards UFC 180. And as we talked about last week, that has changed dramatically, as that is now Fabricio Werdum and Mark Hunt, as opposed to Cain Velasquez, who was hurt last week. A minor knee injury, should be back in March, which these are not related things, but since when we kind of do this new segment, it's kind of free-flowing.
Yeah.
That is also around the same time that one Carlos Condit would like to be back. So we'll get Condit and Cain hopefully back in 2015, right around that time.
So Cain's just had surgery last week and apparently had more damage than expected. So my guess is that spring of 2015 is an optimistic time frame for them.
Let me ask you a different question then. Would you not say, though, that Cain's body has sort of denied the odds up until this point anyway?
Absolutely. He's a world champion. His body has also failed him a number of times.
He's sure.
Two shoulder injuries and now, you know, major knee injuries.
Sure. So we'll have to wait and see. But that right now, that's the tentative time frame. And that has no effect on Carlos. Carlos will be back in 3 weeks. UFC 182 has changed as Miles Jury and Donald Cerrone becomes the co-main event. Why, you ask? Well, that's because UFC 184 becomes Chris Weidman, Vitor Belfort, and Ronda Rousey and Kat Zingano, which, again, those...
Let's fly out there, Eric. Let's do it.
Well, I mean, Ken tweeted it. I think we totally should. But what's fascinating is, if you remember back to December, this was the same two champions on the same card.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, we should probably keep doing this because people seem to love when Chris Weidman and Ronda Rousey fight. And I think
interestingly, Weidman and Rousey have the same agent.
Oh, so do they? I did not know that.
A connection there. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, we're dealing with injuries. Not in the case of Ronda, but with Weidman, you're dealing with injuries. So I guess that would be a lot of conspiracy theory to get us to the point that the agent is pairing them together. But
another interesting point with that lineup is that Weidman Belfort is the headliner when they say Ronda Rousey is the biggest star in the UFC. So perhaps this is going back to the, you know, the heavier championship bout goes last and headlines the card.
Yeah, and maybe they're not quite ready to go all in on that.
Yeah.
We're still not done with, and I say the word experiment with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. We're still not done with the tough experiment to name a new champ at 115 pounds in the women division. That will wrap up here in the next week or two. And so we'll see what draw is there, because there was a lot, going back to talk about Conor McGregor, there's a ton of personality in that house, ton of people to do
some... It's a great season of tough.
It is a great season of tough. so now's the time to see how exciting that becomes when we get them into the octagon, because that is the litmus test, right? We see these great seasons, and you're like, ah, Joe was awesome in The Ultimate Fighter. I love seeing him. You know, and I used Uriah Hall as a perfect example. Uriah Hall was amazing. He knocked everybody out for an entire season, gets into the octagon, and he's worthless until he makes some changes, right? And now you're starting to, now you're starting to see him put some stuff together and become more interesting. And he's fighting Costa Philippou next, right?
Isn't that really?
Yeah. And so, that'll be a tough test for him. But the real point here being, it's easier, it seems, to fight under those high pressure cooker situations of your only two jobs are wake up and fight, literally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you get out into the real world where you've got to pay bills, pay trainers, eat right, work out when you're supposed to work out, because you've got all these other, you've got kids and family.
UFC
and
boot camp.
And it seems to work well for a lot of people, and then doesn't necessarily make the transition into the live fire drill that is a live event that easy. So we'll wait to see what happens there. But UFC 184 in February, that's going to be Weidman and Belfort, Ronda and Kat Zingano, a very exciting fight we've been waiting for a long time.
This might be this probably is the most exciting Ronda Rousey fight to date. This is her arch nemesis, like we were talking about earlier. Kat's undefeated.
Sure.
These two have been going at it for years now. Kat was calling her out, but then Kat lost her husband, who was also her BJJ and MMA trainer, and she blew out her knee. So this has been a long time coming. I'm really looking forward to the Ronda Rousey-Zingano fight. Definitely give it to Ronda, but it's going to be a great lead-up and a good fight.
Do you think that this is a bigger test? And I know I'm going to – this will be a lot of supposition, but do you think this is a bigger test than Holly Holm will be?
So Holly Holm is a professional boxer. She's made her way through the regional circuits. She just signed with the UFC because there were some negotiation terms that they had to meet. She's the biggest signed, women's fighter in the last few years. Well, I guess the last couple years. Holly Holm is great on her feet, but I think Ron is just going to dominate her on the ground. Ron is going to take her down and submit her. She might play with her a little bit before she does just to beat her up, but Holly has no chance against Ronda on the ground. So, yes, I think Kat is a bigger test for Ronda. What's your thoughts on the fight?
We've talked about this fight for the better part of 11 months because she's been on the shelf for 9 of them with an injury. I'm super excited to see it. I like that she's undefeated. I like that she came back in a very emotional way, which feeds to your need to see the end of the story, right?
Sure.
All of these terrible things happened to me, and then I came out and just destroyed this person, and now I'm ready to do the thing that I was predestined to do.
Right.
From a sports perspective, it's the stuff that 30 for 30 looks for, right? Crazy, terrible run, but you're undefeated the entire time, and then you get to face Ronda Rousey in February in Los Angeles at the Staples Center, and then what happens?
Yeah.
So excited to see that. I'm super excited to see what Weidman can do to Belfort, because I think there's a lot of people like myself who just don't like the way that division has gone with PEDs and kind of wants to get that whole thing behind us. And this is one step towards doing that.
I think this is the big step, right? So TRT Vitor was a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
TRT Vitor was knocking out several guys a year in an outstanding fashion, spinning wheel kicks, and just, he looked like an animal out there. Are we going to see that same guy? Probably not without the TRT. Although Mike Dolce is working with Vitor right now.
Sure.
He's in fantastic conditioning. Vitor is saying the same thing. I can't imagine either of them would say anything but that. Although I do give, that is a check in Vitor's box, working with Mike Dolce to get off of this TRT run that he's been on.
Yes. But I heard, again, going back to the Fight Companion, if you don't follow Joe Rogan, you certainly should. If there's two podcasts aside from this one, you should certainly listen to. It's Chael's new one that he started. It's called You're Welcome. And
that is beautiful.
And then Joe Rogan's, and especially when Joe does the Fight Companion. Now, there's a little bit of a delay. So for me, I find the Fight Companion super helpful when it's Fight Pass, so you can kind of consume it when you want to consume it, because there's obviously a delay. They're watching the event, then you streaming the podcast, so there's a 8-second delay there. However, Brendan Schaub had an interesting perspective that I don't know that we've ever talked about, and I don't know that up until the point I heard it, it made a ton of sense to me, but I'd never thought about it out loud. And that is that the reason PEDs and TRT are such a help is not in the fight, but in the training camp. Because when you talk about that spinning wheel kick, he can do it 1,500 times a day when you can maybe only do it 500 times. And so anyone who follows, kinesthetics and how your body works, if you're able to do something 1,500 times, it just becomes part of you and you don't have to think about it anymore. Where somebody who's just learning that and their body fails on them in a way that, like, they've got to stop training for the day and start over, that makes it so that there's an automatic advantage that you wouldn't necessarily have if you weren't on something like that. So
traditionally, the guys would try and cycle off before the fight.
Of course they would, because it doesn't really help you in that scenario. It's not like you're going to build muscle between round one and round two, right? But again, we've never really talked about the actual advantage, which is in the training camp. You don't get hurt. You you recover quicker, all of those things, so you have a better camp. And it'll be interesting, and I think a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen here, because all the while we've been waiting for this fight, Chris is the one that got hurt. Vitor didn't, so Vitor had more time to adjust and cycle and whatever he's going to do to get back to his actual shape without the help of TRT. And so we'll have to wait till February to check that out. A couple other huge things that happened this week. Tough Brazil, they opened up the tryouts for Tough Brazil, and 600 lightweight and bantamweight fighters showed up for this thing.
That's great to hear.
Which was, in a news perspective, prior to them announcing, at least to the general public, who the two coaches are. You know, and those two coaches are Shogun and Anderson Silva, which...
Is it going to be held in Brazil?
It's going to be Brazil 4, yes.
Okay.
But I have not, unless you have. Anderson this week signed a 15-fight deal, which, okay, you're rolling your eyes.
Did Vince McMahon give him that deal?
Well, but think about it from a perspective of the Fertittas, right? They just watched Hoyce Gracie essentially become Benedict Arnold and join Bellator.
Yeah. Good point.
For me, that seems, and you can... think whatever you want. But for me, that seems like dirty pool, right? You helped build this organization. They've been very kind to you all the way through you getting popped with your PEDs. Yeah, there was some ruffling the feathers, but the most part...
You're a Hall of Famer.
A Hall of Famer. They certainly treated you better than they treated Frank Shamrock, right?
Although they're back on good terms.
They are back on good terms, but I think it took a while and it took, you know,
Dana.
It's
hard for anybody to be good on good terms with Frank Shamrock.
That's true, and I certainly feel that from Dana's perspective, he probably watched an episode of Jim Rescue and just felt bad for him and just wanted to, like...
It was a sympathy.
You clearly need some help here, so let us step in here and help you. So if you're the UFC, you don't want him... Not that he would, but... You don't want him to have the opportunity to even have the conversation. So a 15-fight deal, he's not going to do 15 fights.
Yeah, it shows a commitment from both sides.
From both sides. Right? You're going to stay here for the length of 15 fights.
Right.
And if you don't fight 15 fights, there's probably – we don't have the contract. I don't need to see the contract. There's probably an expiration date.
Yeah.
And if not an expiration date, a buyout term or whatever that is. But
we want you to be a lifelong UFC employee.
Yes.
To bring it back to the Vince McMahon thing, the reason he signed Hulk Hogan for a 30-year deal when Hulk was in his 50s is because Hulk is in his mid-60s now, and he's still one of the biggest professional wrestling stars in the world. When Hulk shows up, I was in Clearwater a couple weeks ago, and he's got his own shop, and his shop is full on a Tuesday afternoon with Hulk Hogan fans. It's amazing. So, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They want this long-term commitment. They don't want the Hoyce Gracie going to the Bellators, and it's a gesture of good faith between the two parties.
And the difference there being Hulk was a terrible wrestler even in the 80s, but he was a brilliant marketer.
Blasphemy.
He was terrible, dude. He was never a good wrestler. Ask any actual...
When I was 8, he was the best wrestler in the whole world.
First of all, that's not...
I was looking at technique.
First of all, that's not true. It was the Ultimate Warrior. Secondly, but same sort of thing, right? My point of bringing this all up is I have not seen anywhere, unless you have, that these two are going to fight at the end of this.
They are not going to fight.
Okay,
No, they will not be fighting after this. These are the two superheroes of...
Of course they are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to get 600 people to show up, tell them that you could be coached by Anderson Silva or Shogun.
Yeah, in fact, at the last pay-per-view, Anderson Silva walked out to a standing ovation. I mean, the whole crowd went crazy. This is the first time we've had a champ walk out at a pay-per-view just to kind of say hi to the crowd and get everybody amped up. And the place went
crazy. And they also went nuts. And I saw on Facebook and Twitter that people were kind of thinking that he was stealing the spotlight from Fabio Maldonado. But that
there's
was
a story behind that.
You know, but that was for me, that was a cool moment to see, right?
Yeah,
he gets
up
on the apron, so to speak, and gives him a hug before he fights. And
it was weird and awkward, but Anderson Silva has always been weird and awkward. And I don't think it's just the translation that makes him a weird cat.
No, I just think he's a weird cat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's a mystic, right? I mean, prior to Chris Weidman, who was clearly the Lex Luthor in this scenario, prior to that, you could not figure out how to beat him. Even if you're Chael Sonnen, you beat him up for 24 minutes and 30 seconds, he still finishes you.
That's why any fan of MMA can distinctly remember Chris Weidman clipping him and him falling to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I can vividly remember that, and that's why the whole world was shocked. Twitter blew up when that happened.
Yep.
It was taking down the superhero.
So, you know, they're going to coach the Ultimate Fighter 4 in Brazil, and we'll kind of make sense of that as that launches here. I'm imagining
it's going to be on Fight Pass.
It is going to be on
Fight Pass. Any Fight Pass Ultimate Fighters?
Not Ultimate Fighters. I'm in love with the documentaries that they're putting out. What's it called? But they do, like, I think it's Fight Conversations or whatever, okay, where they sit down. They just did one with Bisping, which I loved. I actually bought, I don't think you were on the episode when I talked about it, but I actually bought Fight Pass to see the Nevada Athletic Commission meeting between Cormier and John Jones. It's actually when they got me to pay for it, right? It wasn't even a fight.
Yeah.
But I have not watched any of the Ultimate Fighter stuff. And I think that, you know, for all the stuff that we said bad about Fight Pass, it's getting better and better and better.
And they've got Invicta on there now, which is huge.
Yeah, which is this weekend. So you can catch that. The weigh-ins will be at 5 o'clock today. To me, once they get it on the platforms, I'll consume a lot of it. Once it gets to my Xbox One, I'll be watching it all the time.
Agreed.
It's just I'm not somebody who watches a lot of video, long-form video on my phone. I'm just not one of those people. So I just don't – or laptop or whatever. You know, it's kind of cumbersome. A couple other things to talk about. We talked about Connor and Dennis Seaver. That fight is January 18th. That's Ultimate Fight Night 59. Also on that card, Benson Henderson and Eddie Alvarez, which people are calling for an early vote for Fight of the Year in 2015.
When's the last time Benson Henderson had a fight of anything? Let's be honest.
Well, I'm glad that you had to say it, and I didn't. So it'll be an interesting one to watch, and it'll be fascinating to see what Eddie looks like in fight number two. Because clearly... fight number one with Donald Cerrone didn't really go.
He said he just never could turn it on. And perhaps it was the big lights, you know.
Well, either that or I just think there's – if you've never met a person like Donald, it's probably hard to imagine this. But when you've studied this and been around the fight game and been to enough UFCs and met these guys, Donald is a guy that is just – he's hard to figure out only because he's not there for the lights. He's not there for the money. And all of that stuff is nice, and he spends all of it. You know, there's a big joke in the industry that he spends the Fight of the Night check before it's even written on wakeboards and boats and Budweiser and whatever. But all of that feeds into the mythos that is Donald Cerrone, which is he's only there because somebody told him he could fight a human being in a cage.
Right.
Right? And that
funds these...
it funds the other things that he does, which is to him an added benefit. The only thing he wants to do is get in there and test himself. And you allow him to do that. And so for him, it's like playing Call of Duty, right? It's just a fun thing he does. And people that are wired like that, and people that are wired like that in this particular case, Donald Cerrone, who are operating at a high level, meaning having a lot of success at it, it's hard to shake them off their game, especially when you have to deal with the lights and the music and the crowd for the very first time.
Yeah, he's knocking on the door of a titles fight as well. He won four times against big names in 2014. So, and he's ranked fourth, I believe, right now. So this win over Eddie Alvarez, who's ranked ninth or tenth, should put him right there in the conversation. There's no reason he shouldn't be yet. Who else has won four times in 2014?
You mean Cerrone?
Yeah, Donald.
Well, Cerrone's fighting Jury, so that's a big fight for Jury. I mean, Alvarez fighting Henderson,
right?
You know, should get Alvarez back on.
I was going back to the Alvarez.
Right, getting him back on track because I'm with you. I think Benson certainly got cardio for days, but much in the same category as Frankie Edgar.
Yeah,
really interesting guy to fight, but not a guy that you consider in that echelon, right? You just said it. Well, Donald Cerrone is like a minute away from a title fight.
Yeah.
And
what does this say about Bellator, too? So if Eddie Alvarez, the Bellator lightweight champ, goes over to the UFC and then loses both his first two fights in the UFC?
Loses both, and, you know, one of them to somebody who's not the champion, right?
Exactly.
It's not like it was champion versus champion.
And that's what it was supposed to be. The Donald Cerrone was a tough fight, but then he was going to get the championship bout after that. Yeah. So it's hard to compare one organization to another just from one fighter, but you can still make that parallel that, okay, the lightweight champion comes over the UFC and can't hang with the top 10.
Absolutely. A couple other things happening this week. GSP was on the aforementioned Chael Sonnen podcast with a very interesting insight. One, he said that the return to training means nothing. take that with a grain of salt,
yeah,
kids, because, you know, I think at some point he's going to have to just scratch that itch, so to speak. But the other thing he said is he thought that Nick accepting the Anderson fight at Anderson's home at 185 was a critical error on his part because he's been fighting at such low weights. Catch weight, he thought he would have a much better shot.
Sure.
But at 185, he thinks that's a really huge mistake.
Yeah, Nick is a welterweight.
He
traditionally fights at 170.
Right, and he's fought at 150. You know, he's fought at other weight classes. Yeah. But being that big is probably going to be a problem for him. Unless, in my opinion, unless, of course, Nick can goad Anderson into the tag and move that he's very good at.
Yeah, I think that's the question. What Anderson Silva are we going to see after coming back? You know, mentally, you posted an article this week, the mental aspect of a major injury, like snapping your leg in half. Having to overcome that.
Like snapping your leg in half.
That is going to be undoubtedly in the back of his mind somewhere when he throws that first hard kick and Nick's going to try and check it.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a factor. And then also sitting on the bench so long, are we going to see better improved Anderson Silva, or is this kind of the Chuck Liddell over the hill downslide? You know, I think Nick is still in his prime and going to do very well. But what are we going to see from Anderson Silva? And that's not to say he can't come back better. Look at Peyton Manning after his neck surgery.
Sure.
Came back and went to the Super Bowl, and they're undefeated this year. Denver Broncos, that is.
Right.
Of course,
the Denver Broncos. Why not? And that's, of course, the question. The upside of Nick is that he hasn't been as busy as other fighters his age because he's a very difficult human to deal with. But that difficulty, if there was such a word, obviously makes it so he's fresher. We talked last week about the Korean Zombie, not excited, but trying to make lemons out of lemonade. Excited from a professional standpoint to be in the military for 2 years because he just gets to train for 2 years without having being punched in the head. Yeah. So he can be super, if he can stay up on the techniques, be super fresh in 2 years to come back and see what happens.
And Nick stays very active. He's he does
runs triathlons for fun in the quote unquote off season.
Right. He has his own gym that they run out in Lodi, California.
Yeah.
Stockton 205.
What? So John Jones, a couple of sponsorships this week, big ones. John Jones looking to sign with Reebok.
What happened to his Nike deal? Did he lose it being a knucklehead or something?
Yes, he lost it being a knucklehead. I believe that was a more recent thing, but he's talking with Reebok. Ronda Rousey, who has not been a knucklehead, has signed with Buffalo Pro, which is a lifestyle brand, and I guess she's the first female face of this brand ever. And as we've talked about, not only huge fans of her as a fighter on this show, but just what she can do for this organization with stuff like this.
Yeah.
All of the movies, all of the sponsorships, all the.
She's got Judo Jean LaBelle, one of the original mixed martial arts fighters in the world, as one of her mentors, one of her first trainers, mm-hmm. in her ear helping. So Jean said that he still gets a check in the month, and Jean's like 80 years old. For all the movie deals that he did when he was younger. And so he's coached her to get out there and sign these sponsorships and start doing media so he can continually live after, you know, MMA is a young man's sport, young man and woman's sport. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a day that you're going to have to rely on something else. And he wisely has advised her on that.
Well, and I think that that's something that this sport, you know, we compare often the UFC to the NFL because Dana wants the UFC to be the NFL. I have my doubts. But the one thing that I can unequivocally say they do 1,000 times better than the NFL is prepare their athletes for the after.
For the real world.
Right?
Yeah.
You've got 10 or 11 fighters working for Fox Sports right now. Now. 8 of them are active fighters.
Sure.
You know, not save for Brian Stann and Stephen Bonner. Well, no, Stephen went to I think there's two that aren't actually fighting right now, but everybody else is on the active roster. Ken Flo, there you go. on the active roster, and that's just like, hey guys, you should probably, you're really smart and good at analyzing fights, you should probably do this stuff. Yeah. And we'll bring a couple of you into all of these events we're doing, because Rogan and Goldie can't be everywhere.
Right.
As much as we'd like them to be omnipotent, they can't. We had to hire John Anik, we put Brian Stann in one place, Ken Flo in another, but we need two men teams everywhere.
Yeah. Dana has once said, they've hired Chuck Liddell, Matt Hughes, and a couple other guys. He said, I can't hire all my guys, but these people helped me build this business. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be where we were without them. So that long-term loyalty being reciprocated is a quality I appreciate about Dana White.
Yeah, and not to sound like a company guy who drinks the Kool-Aid, that's why I feel the Hoist going to Bellator just kind of slaps the face of what this organization, which right. for all of its faults, and we could talk about them forever, they're loyal to a fault. Sure. You know, they stand behind guys that maybe we don't think they should, with Thiago Silva. You know, yeah. we talked about that. And it bites them, right? But at the end of the day, you have to admire an organization that kind of wants to take the side of the people at the end of their career.
Yeah.
This stuff with the domestic violence with Anthony Johnson and Thiago Silva, I don't want to talk about that stuff. What I'm saying, though, is Chuck Liddell and those guys, they are right. taking care of them, and they're trying to take care of as many guys as they possibly can in as many arenas.
And it might go back to the roots of the Fertitta brothers in Dana White, too. They started as fans. They're huge boxing fans. They were huge MMA fans then, and then bought the organization and run it as fans.
Absolutely.
So I think that kind of, in, you know, that's in the fabric of the type of organization that they run. Of course, they have their faults. Any big company's going to have their faults.
Any person does, right?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
The organizations are run by people. Right. All right. So still a lot of stuff to come this November. We'll run through that really quickly. Next weekend, you've got two in a row. You've got Ultimate Fight Night 55, which is Rockhold and Bisping if they don't kill each other before they get to the fight. And then you have UFC Fight Night 56 with OSP taking the place of Shogun's original opponent, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
And you've got Ian McCall and John Lanker, assuming John Lanker can make weight for twice this year.
Right.
And then November 15th, that is that that famed UFC 180, Fabricio Werdum, Mark Hunt, Jake Ellenberger taking on Kelvin Gastelum, undefeated Kelvin Gastelum, who at welterweight could be a force to be reckoned with here. If he gets past Jake, now we've got to start talking about what do we do with you? Dude who murdered Uriah Hall in the Ultimate Fighter finale.
Underdog.
You've got Ricardo Lamas taking on Dennis Bermudez as those two figure out where their place in the universe is. So a lot of really, really fun fights left for November, including Frankie Edgar, Cub Swanson. That will be at the end, the Saturday before Thanksgiving. We will cover all of those things. And remember, you can always follow along on Twitter or Facebook by searching WOW Show. Have an awesome weekend. Joe, have a happy Halloween.